This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and that's the mystery clip.
I still can't get my fingers in there.
We don't even know where that came from.
That's how good they are.
Oh, yeah.
I think it synthesized myself.
They were sneaky.
Was my evil twin. Anyway, we're joined by Heather Maliska from NASA.
Ah, it's rocket science.
Everybody,
you know,
wanted to work for NASA when we were kids.
That's right.
NASA was cool. Still is.
Still is cool. They've done a lot of great things.
And she wants to talk about unmanned aircraft being integrated into our national airspace.
Oh, this is a hot button.
Which is a hot button issue for a lot of guys, yeah.
Right. So UAS and the NASA Unmanned Aircraft System integration in the National Airspace System, we're trying to safely integrate UASs into the NAS.
Okay, what UAS?
So we're focused on the larger...
No, I mean the acronym.
Unmanned Aircraft System.
Systems.
So
I thought that's what it was.
It's a system, so it implies that there's a pilot on the ground flying from a ground control station, the UAS.
Right. So there's a lot of model airplane guys going, yeah.
So I don't know about that.
You were speaking when we were in the student lobby, whatever, reception
area. That area.
that you're developing standards and such. So you're actually almost creating a pilot certification system that this pilot must be able to do this to become a pilot certified to fly in the national airspace.
Well, it's more so focused on the manufacturers of the UASs, the unmanned aircraft, the industry, and telling them what they need to abide by when they develop their UAS and what systems they need to have installed on their UAS when they're flying out in the national airspace.
Right, so they can integrate seamlessly.
That's right.
Well, here's my question.
She did assure me, though, that they will not be carrying missiles.
No, too absolutely
close.
Not.
Gotta be switching the guns then.
You cut me out of the pattern.
Well, here's the question. You know, when you talk about UASs and multi-rotors and everything, this covers a wide spectrum of aircraft from, you know, the hobbyist aspect with the guys with the DJI Phantoms and the new
GoPro
Karma.
You're thinking
Karma.
Too small.
That's what I'm wondering about. I'm wondering if this is meant for the hobbyist, which would be like myself, or is this for commercial applications?
This is for a commercial application. So as he said, we're working to develop these standards, but we're looking at larger aircraft. We're looking at our current research is focused on an MQ-9 sized aircraft, a Global Hawk sized aircraft. That was our first phase of our project. Our second phase, we're starting to miniaturize things and bring it down to the medium sized UASs. So we've been working doing flight tests with this MQ-9 out at Armstrong Flight Research Center, where we're testing a system called a detect and avoid system that's meant to replace the eyes of a pilot on the aircraft. So this system has a radar installed on it, it's got ADS-B and it's got TCAS, so that the algorithms that our researchers are developing can fuse that information and then display it to a pilot in that ground control station so that he can see the oncoming traffic that's around him.
So the display system you're developing, is it going to be a video game kind of thing where we actually see a orange dot? That's not something we want to hit coming at you.
That's right. It looks like a radar. It's got the unmanned aircraft in the center, and then it shows different triangles for the oncoming manned aircraft. And then based on the location of the aircraft, how close it is to the unmanned aircraft, how fast the aircraft is going, it will change colors. And that provides guidance to the pilot of the unmanned aircraft as far as how to maneuver away from that oncoming aircraft.
So what you're talking about here is basically the same kind of a display or something similar to what an air traffic controller would see.
Very similar. That's right. Very similar to that.
Now, do you have specific commercial applications in mind, or you don't really care about that part?
Well, we do, right? So we're trying to develop the standards for commercial applications. So the market is growing. The aerospace market is growing a tremendous amount, and so the UAS side of it is a big piece of that. There's several different markets looking at it. The agricultural market is looking to use UASs to survey areas. The forestry industry is looking to use it for forest fires. We do a lot of research, we've done some flights where you monitor a forest fire. So you're up there for several hours on end just going around the forest fire, monitoring the growth of that fire. And so we need to have a detect and avoid system installed on the airplane so that it can deconflict with any oncoming traffic.
Especially if the pilot's focused on watching a forest fire.
Yeah.
He's not looking
out
for other aircraft.
That's right.
The other thing is that a system like that could be integrated into search and rescue, too.
That's the other market that's looking at this as well.
If you have UAS upstairs with FLIR on it, that makes it a lot easier to find missing people.
That's right.
And not to mention all the critters that are down there looking for the same person.
How much... Have you guys thought about the ultra high altitude applications? They always talked about low cost, essentially using aircraft as a satellite, as a relay, you know, orbiting for days and weeks and stuff.
Right. So the second phase of these minimum operational performance standards will start to look at the high altitude UASs.
Because that's a whole different see and avoid scenario. You got everything screaming along at high speed up there.
That's right. That's right. And you have to transit up there, right? So the challenge is not necessarily being up there in that high altitude. It's more so transiting up through class A airspace.
Well, you know, my guess is that with the high altitude ones, what they're going to want to do is they're going to want to be above the airliners because it's simpler that way. You don't have as much traffic to worry about.
But like she said, they're climbing along at a, you know, speeding 42 knots.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So it takes them a very long time to get up there.
Yeah.
Cessna 172 speeds up at airline altitudes. That's interesting.
And the best part is the electronics don't have to be on oxygen above 12,000.
No, nothing has to be on oxygen except for maybe the pilot, but he's on the ground, so that's a given.
Yep. Three crashes, though, and he's retrained.
Yeah. You can't reset the machine, though. There's no reset button. Yeah. And you know, the interesting part about that, too, is you're up there with a, you know, say a fairly good-sized UAS. You're buzzing along, climbing out at about 90 miles an hour, maybe. And you got an airliner coming up behind you here who's doing 500 miles an hour. They don't have the time or the ability to dodge and avoid that. It'd be a very violent, aggressive maneuver. The passengers wouldn't like it, and it's just not a safe thing to do.
Right, so that's why it's on the owner of the UAS, the pilot of the UAS, to maneuver away from any oncoming traffic. So it's the UAS's responsibility to get out of the way of the oncoming traffic.
At this point, your systems are strictly detect and inform, but and would it be natural to assume a progression is if the pilot doesn't do something, eventually the aircraft will take control and do it itself?
Right. We've actually done some flight tests, not only with detect and avoid, which provides guidance to the pilot, so it allows the pilot to maneuver away from an oncoming aircraft, but we have also worked with the FAA on their airborne collision avoidance system, which is meant to replace TCAS. So we work with the unmanned variant of that. And that system is meant to, if the oncoming traffic breaches what we call a well-clear volume, where we allow the pilot to maneuver away from oncoming traffic, if he breaches that well-clear volume and he gets into a collision avoidance situation, this ACAS-XU system, airborne collision avoidance system, would automatically maneuver the unmanned aircraft away from the oncoming traffic. So we've done one flight test in 2014 out at Armstrong Flight Research Center where we've actually flown our Econa MQ-9 aircraft against another unmanned MQ-9 aircraft and automatically maneuvered away from an oncoming unmanned aircraft.
Okay.
This has got to be complicated, to say the least, not necessarily hardware-wise, because it sounds like you're going to be able to adapt a lot of off-the-shelf components. The key part is the software, because all of this equipment nowadays is software-driven. That in itself has to be complicated because of all the what-if scenarios that you can run into.
That's right. That's right. And that's what our researchers are focused on, are the algorithms or the software that uses those systems that the TCAS, ADS-B, and the airborne radar. It uses that information from those systems to fuse together and provide it to the pilot.
And then also redundancy in the systems and, oh my God, the TCAS just quit on me. What do I do now?
Right, right. And so it's able to decide which of the sensors is the right sensors to use. So our flight tests have looked at different combinations of those sensors.
So that's Your focus is strictly that. You're not worried about loss of control of the aircraft or anything like that, telling the pilot, you know, you're in a spin, fix it. So that's a whole other purview.
That's a whole other thing. That's right.
Okay, that's coming, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah,
we're just
definitely
touching the surface here. We've done the phase one minimum operational performances standards, and so there's many more that need to come behind it.
What's the schedule timeline, like 5-10 years? I mean, you're going to have to do a tremendous lobbying effort to get pilots to accept it as well.
That's right. So these first phase of the MOPS, I'll call them minimum operational performance standards, were published in May, and they're provided to the FAA to turn into technical standard orders. And those were focused on aircraft transiting up to Class A airspace and then back down. The next phase of the minimum operational performance standards will start to look at terminal airspace. So that's another 4-year project that we're looking at. So beyond that, there is more after that. So there's a,
Well, Would the goal be to have these things able to land at any airport, like a commercial airport, like Philly or O'Hare?
Yeah,
or?
That's the ultimate goal.
Wow.
That's going to be interesting.
It is.
Well, that's a big job.
It is.
Well, you know, you just think about, all right, you're worrying about hardware, software, and everything. But think about the ramifications with the traveling public. You know, there's
that's
a lot of people
challenge.
Out there that are absolutely hysterical about unmanned aircraft.
That's right.
And, you know, between that and the regulations, the FAA, the airlines, you're facing a big mountain of obstacles here.
Well, you've got a tough biscuit to chew there.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be challenging for sure, because I think the way I'm looking at this thing from a regulatory standpoint, it's going to be easier to program the aircraft than it is to get through all the paperwork.
Yeah, yeah,
I think the technical challenges are far easier than the political ones.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, I want to thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you.
And you guys are over at the NASA Pavilion building.
We are, yep, all
cool.
day.
Stop on over and see them.
Definitely.
This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie. You've been listening to Heather Maliska here from NASA, and this is EAA Radio.